Morning.
I gotta put on my own slideshow on. I teach off Sue's slideshow, but it's not as interesting. Really? That's weird. Morning. We're going to continue our study on troubles in numbers today. So lesson three. Chuck dealt with manna. Weldon dealt with quail. So next problem today. So anyway, today we're looking at opposition to Moses, which quite honestly, I know people grumbled about him, but I don't think I'm really familiar with today's story. I don't think I've seen it before, and I don't think I'd really thought about the opposition to leadership, some of that kind of thing that you see. My picture has nothing to do with opposition to leadership, because I quite honestly probably didn't have a good picture of a riot or anything else. So anyways, it's a butterfly. Yes, Lepidoptera, it's a butterfly. These are very small, Saronin blues. You ever seen one? They're small, about the size of your pinky fingernail. We have them at the shop. They're around. They flutter around in the grass. You don't really see them higher than that. I only see them high noon, sun's straight up. You tell how small it is because that's one of those seeds. When the grass goes a seed and it splits, yeah, that's what it's walking on. So they're really neat. I don't know. I just like that picture. The inside of them is it's blue. It's a bluish purple. They're pretty neat. So anyways, that's just what picture I took. So we'll start with the end, and then we're going to read the story, and then we'll talk about it. Scripture stresses the need to recognize those in positions of authority. This is important in the Israelite camp, and it remains important today. For this reason, Paul instructed the Thessalonians, "We ask you, brothers, to respect those who labor among you and who are over you in the Lord, and admonish you and to esteem them very highly in love because of their work. Be at peace among yourselves." 1 Thessalonians 5, 12 and 13. Additionally, the author of Hebrews commanded, "Obey your leaders and submit to them, for they are keeping watch over your souls as those who will have to give an account. Let them do this with joy and not with groaning, for that would be of no advantage to you." It doesn't mean you can't challenge a rogue leader. Nevertheless, such should not occur except with prayerful consideration. Do not admit a charge against an elder except on the evidence of two or three witnesses. As for those who persist in sin, rebuke them in the presence of all, so that the rest may stand in fear. And we're actually going to look at some consequences too. So anyways, so here's the story. Numbers 12 is where we're going to start. The story really goes about, it's an opposition to leadership is what I'm going to say it is. And the more I thought about the lesson, it's like, is the lesson looking at opposition to like church leadership, or is it just leadership in general? Would it apply to a political situation as well as it would in a church? And I think it's really looking at more leadership in God's kingdom, okay? Is where I'm going to say it's probably leaning towards. You might be able to apply the same lesson to a political situation, but I would say it's in God's kingdom is where it would be. So I kind of broke this down into verse by verse, maybe a couple verses at a time, because sometimes if you just read the chapter, you miss it, I think. And I think when you break it down piece by piece, you see things a little different. So I'd like to read through it, and then we'll go from there. Anyone want to read, or do you want me just to read it? I don't care. I don't have chocolate to coax anybody today. I'll read it. You read it? Okay, verse 2. Isn't that it? That's all it says, isn't it? That's the funny thing. They're freaking out about his wife. That's the only thing. Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's when we get to it. That's the only complaint. And I think it's deeper than that. And they found some reason to complain. Yeah, and there's more to it than that. Yeah, the jealousy. It seems that pops up. But what they bring up is something that. Just like being at the dentist, only different. Yeah, there you go. Verse 2.
And they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also? And the Lord heard.
Verse 3. Four and five.
Suddenly the Lord said to Moses, Aaron and Miriam, come out, you three, to the tent of meeting. And the three of them came out. And the Lord came down in a pillar of cloud and stood at the entrance of the tent and called Aaron and Miriam, and they both came forward.
6 through 9.
And he said, hear my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak with him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. With him, I speak mouth to mouth, clearly, and not in riddles. And he beholds the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? And the anger of the Lord was kindled against them, and he departed.
Verse 10. Leprous. 11 and 12.
But the Lord said to Moses, if her father had but spit in her face, should she not be shut in 7 days? Let her be shut outside the camp 7 days, and after that she may be brought in again.
And we'll finish up with 15 and 16. Good. So, anybody familiar with this lesson? Anybody ever read or studied this? Yeah? Okay. I don't think I have. But anyways, I thought it was new to me. So, anyways, we'll go through it from there. So, verse 1. Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman whom he had married. For he had married a Cushite woman. I always like how the Bible stresses things. It says it twice, just in case you missed it the first time. Radio announcers do that. It's 9:15. It's 15 minutes after 9 o'clock. That's what 9:15 is. Anyways. So, who's Aaron? Moses' brother. Exodus 4, 14 through 16, just for an example. Then the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, is there not Aaron, your brother, the Levite? I know that he can speak well. Behold, he is coming out to meet you, and when he sees you, he'll be glad in his heart. You shall speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be with your mouth and with his mouth, and will teach you both what to do. He shall speak for you to the people, and he shall be your mouth, and you shall be as God to him. So Aaron is not only Moses' brother, but he is also what? He's a spokesperson. Yeah, he's the spokesperson for Israel. He's the high priest, isn't he? The priest, yes. Yeah, so he's got that role. Pretty high role? Yeah, there's probably, yeah, that's a high role. It's not just like Aaron's just some dude. So who's Miriam? Moses' sister, very good. In Exodus 14, and this happens right after they go through the Red Sea, then Miriam the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took a tambourine in her hand, and all the women went out after her with tambourines and dancing. And Miriam sang to them, sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider he has thrown into the sea. So she is Moses' sister, and she also is what? She's a prophetess. At least at this point, she also seems to be some kind of leadership with the women of the Israelites. So whether that holds later, she only kind of mentioned a couple times. So anyways, I'll go with that from there. So what problem do Miriam and Aaron seem to have with their brother? Like Wanda pointed out, they got one problem. This is what they're pointing out. He married. He married outside the Jewish race. He married a Cushite woman. If you're using a different version of the Bible, for instance, the New King James, it says that she's an Ethiopian woman. Okay, in case you didn't know what a Cushite was. So, that's it. So what may have motivated your complaint? Jealousy is a good answer, to be honest. Jealousy is a good answer because you can see through a challenge. Yeah. Yeah. My brother's number one, but man, he's making some weird choices right here. You know, are you sure he's the guy you want number one? A Cushite woman? Somebody all the way from Ethiopia? Really? Yeah. Well, we haven't seen any of that on TV in a long time. No, I'm sure of that. Clayton? They were told. Yeah, you know, I mean, we talked about the rabble, the ones that left Egypt with them. Now, I don't think he just found her wandering in the wilderness. She may have left Egypt. She may have been a slave woman too. I don't know, but you know, for her to be in that point, he didn't just go on ChristianMingle.com or something like that, right? Kevin laughs, but anyways. Who knows where he met her? And maybe that's just her race. You know, she came from Ethiopia, but it doesn't say that she's not a Jew. She might be a proselyte. Yeah, in Acts chapter 8, when you see Philip and the Ethiopian eunuch, he's from Ethiopia too, obviously. It could be a tribe, too. I mean, it could be a tribe from Ethiopia that, in time of famine, we see people from Canaan move into Egypt. That's where they just came from. Ethiopia is known for famines. You know, maybe they went somewhere else. Maybe that's why they were there. Yeah. And in today's world, they're everywhere. But yeah, at that time, there's migrations. If you go back to Genesis 10, 6, I'm just going to kind of take away one thing. I actually got a call one time from a girl that asked me if Moses had married a black woman. I was like, I don't know. Now you look at her and, yeah, okay. She's probably from Africa. She's probably black. But anyways, that's just, I don't know that it motivated it. I'm going to say jealousy is probably the key to it. But anyways, if you look at the sons of Ham, Noah's family, his sons populate the earth, obviously. The three races, the three brothers, seem to populate different continents when you look at the way it breaks up. The Cushites would be Ham. Yep, sons of Ham are Cush, Egypt, Put, and Canaan. You know where Egypt and Canaan, you know where those lands are. So, yeah, those would be Africa and Arabia. The other two brothers seem to populate basically Asia and Europe with... This is a little different. There's something. Yeah, and they might be, I don't think they're really directly at her, but they might say that decision is kind of a strange thing. So anyways, that's where the people come from. So something, when you get to verse 2, you see there's something more that motivated this complaint than just who his wife was, especially since she's not brought up again. And they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also? And the Lord heard it. So do you think jealousy is what motivates us? Does he speak through those two? Does he speak through Aaron? Does he speak through Miriam? Yeah, Miriam's a prophetess, clearly. It doesn't sound like Aaron comes up with his own words, but he does speak through Aaron. So, yeah. Maybe it's a jealousy, maybe it's a challenge. It's definitely an authority thing is what the key is. And that's really what they're challenging is that authority. What put Moses in that place? What authority he really has? Does he have more authority than they have? That's really what the challenge is about. There's a lot of that out there. It's the doors are closed to people who need them the most. I have friends who have kids my kids' age, but they've never been married because they're not allowed to be married in the church they attend to. Sure. And it's, like you say, there's things that block people for weird reasons. Right. So this one commentary, our notes, they code a lot of commentaries, but this one's from Gordon Wenham, the Tyndale Old Testament commentaries. It was not just a case of family jealousy. You see that kind of stuff with Cain and Abel. You can definitely see that with like the prodigal son. You can see that probably with Jacob and Esau. But this isn't just a case of that. For Aaron, Moses' brother, was also high priest and therefore supreme religious leader and most holy man in Israel. While Miriam, his sister, was a prophetess and thus head of the spirit-filled women. Here then, as an alliance of priest and prophet, the two archetypes of Israelite religion, challenging Moses' position as the sole mediator between God and Israel. So that's really what they're challenging. Is he the top dog? Is he that spot, the sole mediator? So verse 3, now the man Moses was very meek, more than all people who were on the face of the earth. Tell me about Moses. He never wanted a job. Yeah, they've lost track of that. They've lost track of that God picked him. God put him there. And he said no, 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 and no. And God said, no, you're the guy. Yeah. I know I'm not the only one that's had jobs like that. I've said no, no, and no, and still ended up with that job. Those kind of jobs. Yeah. You can say no, but no, this is the job that's picked for you. He didn't put himself in a job. He didn't spend billions of dollars campaigning for this job. He didn't get on TV every chance he got. Wasn't all over the internet.
He didn't like being
noticed. No. Yeah, I'll guarantee ain't nobody had I Like Moses bumper sticker on their goat or anything else, you know? No, he just, more meek than anybody else on the entire planet. That's pretty meek. That's humble. I know some humble people, some people that do a lot, have a lot, are great people, and you might not notice unless you just know. Ashanti has become one of the top soccer players in our age group in the county. He scores more goals than anybody. You know how he celebrates when he scores a goal? He ducks his head and he goes back to the center to start the game again. That's it. Other kids, you'd think they just won the lottery. He's getting less humble on some of that, but he's still probably the most humble kid to ever score a goal. I think he was ashamed the first few goals he ever scored. Which is kind of crazy, but anymore he celebrates with a bacon cheeseburger. He's added the bacon, so it's still pretty humble. I'll give you that. I'll give you that with Tebow. He puts the honor where it's supposed to be. Yeah. That caught the... Yeah, it was all over the media and stuff. He probably hasn't put that on his own Facebook page. Hasn't sent that text to any friend of his. But other people saw it. Does Moses seem to have been abusing his power of authority? I am the key leader of all Egypt. Israel. Sorry, not Egypt. No, has not. He could, though, right? Could. He probably wouldn't have that job very long if he did. Not the 40 years that he has the job, 40 years plus. You know, God kept him there, and he stayed very, very humble. Given this description, are you surprised that God comes to Moses' defense rather than himself? We've read a story. He doesn't defend himself. He doesn't say, many people have said that I am God's speaker, right? He doesn't say, he doesn't come to his own defense. He doesn't knock him out. He just doesn't say a word. God does it. And it's really not a surprise. Would you have expected a very humble Moses to have included this statement about himself in the text? No, even that. It's kind of, when you think about it, that he wrote the book of Numbers, you might stop and think, why in the world did he write that down? But I think the key is that it leads into the rest of the story. And I got Clyde Woods and Justin Waters from their book Leviticus Numbers. The affirmation of Moses' humility, which documents his incapacity and explains a sudden intervention, is thus so central to the context. The supposition of some expositors at verse 3, maybe an editorial addition, perhaps by Joshua, is rendered unlikely. I put that in plain English since I never finished my PhD. I can talk like a normal person and say, Moses kept this in text, explained God's his reaction, and Moses didn't. Joshua didn't edit this in later and put a little carrot and say, Moses is a great guy. So, anyways, it's there to show God's reaction from there, that point on. So verse 4 and 5. Suddenly the Lord came out. Suddenly the Lord said to Moses and to Aaron and Miriam, come out, you three, to the tent of meeting. And the three of them came out. And the Lord came down in a pillar of cloud and stood at the entrance of the tent and called Aaron and Miriam. They both came forward. You know when God calls you out. You, and you come to my office. It's not going to be good, is it? Right? You've heard that announcement from school at some point when you were younger? They have PA systems when you guys are younger? Probably not, right? The principal just shows up at the door with a ruler or a switch or something. You. Right? Weldon's laughing. He's half smiling because he's had that job before. Yeah. Been there, done that. I remember when I was in elementary school. Me and my friends were baseball players, and oranges are plentiful here in Florida. So you throw oranges at people. That's just kind of what kids do. You know, they're oranges. How far can I hit someone on a bike? You know, it's just something kids, boys do. We hit a girl in my class. Somebody did. Or threw them near her, and she complained. And the principal took three of us in there. He says, she says you guys were throwing oranges at her. And I think one of us said, if we'd been throwing oranges at her, we would have hit her. So, yes. Yep. So we, for at least a week, we had to stay, we had to be the last ones off the campus so the other kids could get home safely. So that was our punishment. But yeah, you get summoned, you know it's just not good. My sister's an accountant in the company she worked for one time. She had to run the numbers and stuff, and they said, we're going to need some reductions here. She goes, there's a layoff, and she says, I can see they need to lay off. She goes, and I see no possibility that I'm not going to be laid off. And they made the announcement, and they laid off one person. It was her. It was like, that had to be the saddest announcement of all time, that, you know, they announced that she was the one. So, anyways, get called by God, meet me outside. it ain't going to be good. I remember Job. God listens to Job and his friends for long enough. You get to Job 38, and he says, all right, since you all think you're God, why don't you answer my questions? He goes on for a couple chapters of great questions like, who hemmed in the oceans? Where does snow come from? How much snow is there? You know, who can tame the Leviathan? He's got these great questions that says, you can't answer these? You're not God. I know all these answers. Don't challenge me on who I am. This is the same thing. Come out, stop challenging me. The hearing took place in the context of the visible evidence of the presence of the Lord. For the cloud pillar had descended, stood erect at the entrance of the tent of meeting. From the cloud pillar, the Lord called forth the dissonant sister and brother for a special revelatory session. So, manifestation left zero doubt that God was present. The pillar, this cloud, we see that, Exodus 13, 21 through 22. The Lord came before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them along the way, by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, that they might travel by day and by night. The pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night did not depart from before the people. You saw that show up, you knew it was God, right? No question about it. If we saw that out here, we go to leave this afternoon, right after that last amen, or those that skip out during announcements, either way, you skip out and you go out front, and there's this cloud pillar out front, right? You're trying to get a good seat down at the restaurant, and there's a cloud pillar there. Would you expect God to be there? Or would you just say, that's weird? Today you'd say that's just weird. That's probably how you'd see it. But when they're being led by this day in and day out, they follow the cloud pillar, they pick up their manna, they grind their manna, they bake their manna, they catch their little quail, but they follow this cloud pillar by day, and it's a pillar of fire by night. They know it's God. When that shows up, it's God. Exodus 33, 9 through 11. When Moses entered the tent, the pillar of cloud would descend and stand at the entrance of the tent. And the Lord would speak with Moses. When all the people saw the pillar of cloud standing at the entrance of the tent, all the people would rise up and worship, each at his tent door. Thus the Lord used to speak to Moses face to face as a man speaks to his friend. So Moses would go inside the tabernacle, and the cloud would come to the door of the tabernacle. Everybody in Israel saw it. What did you guys say last week? 1.5 million people? 1.5 million people saw it. What did they do? Stood up and worshiped. How would you like to be that song leader? Got your slideshow ready? Probably wouldn't need one, would you? But Chuck wouldn't have to speak twice to get the crowd to calm down, would you? They're ready to worship. Sorry. They knew. And they saw that. God speaking to Moses. Yeah. Nobody else sees God. They know he's there. They know what comes out of that. God speaks to Moses. Moses speaks to Aaron. The word passes down. Moses talks to God. God talks to Moses, excuse me. How? How does it describe it? As a man speaks to his friend. Face to face. You got friends like that. Friends you can talk about anything and everything. You might have to have some kind of icebreaker, but get there long enough to talk about anything. Chuck? Yeah. There's a conversation there. And that, yeah, Adam had it, Moses has it, and they're both prototypes for Jesus, who's been here. We deserve death for our sins. Don't do that. I've been there. I know what they're going through. I know the temptations they face. I know what it would take to overcome that. Don't do that. I paid a price for that. Don't forget. Okay. Yeah, it's a conversation that goes through there. Our prayers go through him. Same way. Yeah. But it's a conversation, like a man speaks to his friend. 6-9, and he said, "Hear my words." How do you think God sounds? I like to ask that question. I like to everybody ask that question. What do you think he sounds like? What do you think God sounds like? Anybody got any guesses? No guesses? Does he have a New York accent? You'll jump in here? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Kids love that, with cardboard tubes and stuff, talking to those things. Yeah. There you go. There you go. With a voice of authority. Yeah, I could say that. Authority and love. Don't lose that love part. You're right. I'll give you that. Years ago, Lloyd showed some videos in the back. There's some old, what are those evangelism film strips? Jules Miller. I always get his last name wrong. Jules Miller. The old film strips. And beep. And crank it. But Lloyd got a hold of some DVDs, right? And he showed them on a projector in the back. And I went to that and saw some of them. But the soundtrack that went with it, it went from stereo, as the narrator speaks, to mono. God would speak like an AM radio in these DVDs. And I would just... I don't know. You got your attention, but it was kind of funny that God spoke like an AM radio. It was kind of staticky, and it was just what. But so I hear this, I hear AM radio. So, anyways, and he said, "Hear my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, might make myself known to him in a vision. I speak with him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He's faithful in all my house. With him I speak mouth to mouth, clearly, not in riddles." And he beholds the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? And the anger of the Lord was kindled against them, and he departed. How does God say he speaks to prophets? That's how he speaks to prophets. Dreams or visions. That's how he speaks to prophets. Transmit only, yeah. It's like AM radio. I can't talk back to the guy on the radio. There are times you'd like to talk back to the people on the radio, but you can't. People on the TV, wouldn't you like to talk back to them? Wouldn't you like to reach through the screen once in a while? Anyways, but yeah, it's transmit only. He speaks to the prophets in a dream or in a vision. He does. He does. That's the difference. Hey, he speaks to the prophets, so he speaks to Miriam. Yeah. It could be. I think they call him the angel of the Lord, right? An angel of the Lord. There's a big discussion on who the angel of the Lord is. Right. And there's a big discussion, there's a big controversy on who the angel of the Lord is, but a lot of people point towards the pre-incarnate Christ. Yeah. 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 So, like Clayton just said, he speaks to Moses different than he speaks to the prophets. He speaks to them in visions. He speaks to them in dreams. And you do. You see that. You study prophets. We've studied minor prophets here. We studied the Babylonian captivity and the prophets at that time. Daniel? We've done Daniel, yeah. Those are dreams. Yeah, he interpreted dreams the same way. I think Jeremiah and Nehemiah, those guys, not Nehemiah, Jeremiah though, he spoke to him through Ezekiel. Prophets are not something we talk about a whole lot, but when we do, yeah, he speaks to them in dreams and stuff. John's Revelation, the last book of the Bible, same one. Well, yeah, there. I think if you had to meet him head to head, you might just end up that way. Yeah. He spoke to Moses straight on, and that's what he's contrasting it with. I speak to him different. You guys see this. You're his brother and sister. You see how different I speak to him. And you're not afraid to bring, and you're not afraid to speak against him? You saw it? Are you kidding me? Different ways. It is. But he's very close to Moses. He speaks to him a lot different. Since Moses was God's representative, others, including Miriam and Aaron, should have accepted his authority without question. They should have been afraid to speak against God's servant, against Moses, because to speak against him was to speak against God. It's Corey Roper in his book on Numbers. And consequently, the anger of the Lord was kindled against them. So what was the punishment? Verse 10, when the cloud removed from over the tent, behold, Miriam was leprous like snow. And Aaron turned towards Miriam, and behold, she was leprous. There's a consequence. They challenged God. Nothing. Yeah, you're right. Nothing happened to Aaron. He spoke to her before. Like I said, he's telling her. He's saying, I speak to you differently. You should know different. It could be. They both get a punishment of some sort. This guy, Timothy Ashley, says, you know, they started out arguing about his Ethiopian wife, which would have dark skin, and the punishment is she has super white skin. So just literary contrast, possibly, but anyways. He's used this before with Gehazi. Elisha says, don't accept any gifts from Naaman when he gets cured of leprosy. Gehazi does. Punishment is Naaman's leprosy is transferred to Gehazi. Verse 11, Aaron says to Moses, O my Lord, do not punish us because we have done foolishly and sinned. Let her not be as one dead whose flesh is half eaten when he comes out of his mother's womb. Only Miriam got the leprosy. But Aaron goes to Moses. He says, O my Lord, but he's talking to Moses. O leader, O master. So although Miriam got the leprosy, Aaron had to suffer humility. He had to lower himself. He understood that relationship Moses had with God. He went to Moses. Can you talk to God? Can you? Right. Yeah. Well, these are people that can affect. They were in a position to have a nasty effect on the kingdom. Verse 13, and Moses cried to the Lord, O God, please heal her, please. And the Lord said to Moses, if her father just spit in her face, should she not be shamed 7 days? Let her be shut outside the camp 7 days, and after that, she may be brought in again. Numbers 5, you can see this is a common thing to keep from contaminating the camp. Somebody's got something like this, put them outside for 7 days. So it's the same kind of punishment. Treat her like everybody else. 15 and 16, so Miriam was shut outside the camp 7 days, and the people did not set out on the march till Miriam was brought in again. After that, the people set out for Hazeroth and camped in the wilderness of Paran. God had the people stay. She's outside the camp. We ain't going anywhere with her. We're just going to sit for 7 days. Then the pillar is going to move. I ask a question. Anybody else want to challenge God? I'm sure once they saw that, nah. Nah. Moses is the guy, okay? No. Nobody else wanted it. No, pass. What can we do to keep jealousy from affecting our own congregations? We apply this to the kingdom. We apply it to the church. How can we do this to keep jealousy out?
We tend to judge people on looks and things they have, what they do. God says that's what the people in the world do. So we need to not do that. Well, you're a
Yeah. The book of Luke, as you read through it, you'll see time after time people basically just say, if I was the Son of God, I'd do things different. And Jesus' answer basically is, but you're not. I am. And I can take a lot more into consideration. That's why I'm doing things the way I am. I know with the church leadership, the elders, they take in a lot of consideration. What makes sense sometimes is like, why didn't it just happen this way? Because you might not have all the information, and it's got to happen that way. And so we can have a tendency to say, if I was an elder, but the answer really is, if you're not, you're not. Just let them handle it. So, anyways, next week, spies visit Canaan. This ought to turn out well, right? Alrighty. We'll see y'all next week, and I guess Weldon's teaching probably next week, right? Uh-oh, Mary. Oh, he taught last week. Chuck's teaching. Yeah, you're right. Good. Thank y'all.